Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Like us on Facebook, the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @BSportsFree4All. And be sure to check out our weekly blogs on sportsblog.com. Thanks, and enjoy the show. That wasn't supposed to happen. It was supposed to be an exhibition.
Oh, what were you talking about? The Jaguars-Ravens game or the Terps' recent game in the Big Ten, which was another loss?
No, I was talking about Matt Wieters actually taking the qualifying offer.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't supposed to happen. I think a lot of people, when they heard the news, I bet there was a mixed emotions, or I would say more 60-40 were leaning towards him not joining back with the Orioles.
He was the one guy that I would not be, I wouldn't really cry over of him not coming back. The fact that he is coming back now, I just thinking to yourself, was that exactly as they planned? Because the Orioles and Jim Duquette, I called him Jim Duquette. Good grief, I am so sorry, Dano. I'm so sorry, Jim. I actually know Jim Duquette, so it's I feel bad because he gets that a lot. He gets that confusion a lot.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
I kind of like played into that, but anyway, I feel Dan Duquette's probably thinking to himself, that wasn't supposed to happen. Why?
I'm sure Ronda Rousey was thinking that, looking at the replay from the Saturday night fight at UFC 193 against Holly Holm. I think that kick to the face wasn't supposed to happen either.
Yeah, that made a couple people rich.
Yeah, and that may have ruined Ronda Rousey's life for good.
I don't know. It all depends. I mean, Tyson was never the same after getting knocked out by Buster Douglas.
Exactly.
And everybody makes that comparison. You know, the competition that Tyson was going up against when he was knocking out fools is totally different than what Ronda Rousey's been dealing with in a very young sport.
Yeah, and you know what's going to happen? Ronda Rousey's life is going to be forever ruined. I mean, look at it. She was on, the cover of UFC 2, which is on all video game consoles.
Yeah.
And not to mention, you have all these people coming out saying, oh, she's this horrible person, don't trust her.
Everybody coming out of the woodwork on that, too.
Yeah, and you know what's going to happen next? Her boyfriend's going to break up with her and start dating Beth Correa. No, I'm just kidding.
No, it wouldn't be Beth Correa. It would be Misha Tate.
Or probably that, too.
It'd have to be Misha Tate.
Is it going to be like a Ricky Bobby situation where Ronda Rousey comes back and finds her boyfriend with Misha Tate, and she'll be like, I was only gone for 15 minutes. All of her photos replaced with Misha's face. That's not going to happen, obviously.
One loss, and then everybody loves her, and everybody's quick to jump on her. And yeah, you know what it is mostly, though, Josh? It's the Floyd Mayweather crowd.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
All the people who ride his jock.
Yeah. But it's also the people that, you know, of course, living in this era where success is frowned upon, it's the same group of people that want to build you up, crash you down, and then build you back up again. Hey, I mean, in all respect to Baltimore sports fans, it's kind of like Ravens fans right now. They are all blaming John Harbaugh. They're all blaming Joe Flacco. And then once they start crumbling down to the lowest point, the minute they go 14-2 next year, which could happen if they draft right and pick up some free agents, they'll build them back up, back on their pedestal.
So long story short for Ronda Rousey, listen to that Ray Lewis impersonator that the other day came out. Andre Boyd, I think his name was?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Okay.
On Facebook.
Yeah, that guy was pretty amazing. Listen to his advice. You can sit around and think about all your accomplishments, say, I did that. Or you can take all that hate, ball it up, swallow it, be like, come out with fury and fire, whatever he was saying. But basically he was saying, take all that hate, look at it all, write it all down, get it all organized and get it going, use it as your motivation and training, and then come back and be Ronda Rousey again.
Or just give me a call and we can go to Ruby Tuesdays or something.
I don't know about that one.
Yeah, I don't know about that one either. But anyway, getting to the Orioles, which is what we'll start off with on this week's episode. I did write an article, or actually not an article. I wrote a blog recently on sportsblog.com.
An article, Josh. Give yourself some credit.
I'll give myself a proverbial pat on the back there if the microphone can hear that.
You and your quote-unquote journalism.
But on sportsblog.com, I did write an article about Black Friday and the shopping that people want to get into as far as what's on their list and worst case scenario, what they'll get in case the best thing isn't available. Well, I wrote a top 10 list of free agents that I think the Orioles so desperately need. And if worst comes to worst, there are guys from 6 to 10 that they could get at a more realistic price. Matt Wieters, the catcher, the best available catcher on a thin free agent market when it comes to the catcher position, was not on my list. He was nowhere near my list. I mean, Darren O'Day probably, if I did the top 20, he'd be 15th. Matt Wieters wasn't even in my top 20, Ray. So now you have the situation where this past Friday, Matt Wieters accepted the $15.8 million qualifying offer from the Baltimore Orioles, which I think the Orioles were thinking to themselves, oh, there's no way he's going to sign this. He's a Scott Boras client. Oh, wait, never mind. We forgot he's the best available catcher in a thin market. And, yep, now we got another conundrum at the catcher's position and more money down the drain to start the free agency period.
Well, at least it's not on Travis Snyder.
At least it's not on Travis Snyder. At least it's not on Alejandro Diaz. But getting to Wieters
yet.
Here. Yeah, getting to Wieters here, though. Here's a guy who this past season you saw career lows in home runs, RBIs, batting average, on base percentage, and not to mention fielding percentage, because it was the worst I've seen Matt Wieters field all season. And in all retrospect, Caleb Joseph, who has even came out and said, I came up to the Orioles to be Matt Wieters' backup, and he even still said that after Matt Wieters got signed to the qualifying offer or accepted the qualifying offer. I'm thinking to Caleb Joseph, like, dude, give yourself a little bit more credit.
Did he say that last one in jest is like, well, I guess I'm signed to be Matt Wieters' backup.
Yeah.
Yay.
I'm like, give yourself a little more credit. I mean, obviously, you played better than Matt Wieters last year, both offensively and defensively.
You got to remember how long Joseph stayed in the minors, too. I mean, that guy
was... He had quite a journey.
That guy was in the minor leagues when I was working for the Aberdeen Ironbirds. It was definitely quite the journey for one young Caleb Joseph, and now that he's up here in the majors, I mean, yeah, you want to be humble, but at the same time, what Muhammad Ali says, like, humble people tend not to go far.
Yeah, and do you think this case with Matt Wieters is more of a high-risk, high-reward situation for the Orioles because maybe, just maybe, they are hoping that he can put up some kind of production that will help him along the way?
I don't know really about that. Yeah, because...
He'll be turning 30 in 2016, too. Let's not forget about that.
Yes, he'll be turning 30. Maybe you could see a return to form for Matt Wieters, even though what really was his form? I'm kind of confused about that. Always a solid defensive catcher, yes. That would be the one form that he has had. But offensively, what really was his form?
I mean, offensively, when you look at Matt Wieters, and I'm going to be checking out his baseball reference stats right here. But when you look at his career numbers offensively during his tenure with the Baltimore Orioles, in a 162-game average, Matt Wieters has averaged 21 home runs and 79 RBIs, .258 batting average, .320 on-base percentage. I mean, that's not necessarily bad by any means. I mean, the most home runs he hit in a season was back in 2012, and that was the year the Orioles went to the postseason for the first time since 1997, but that's several years back. That's when he was 26 years old. That's when he still had promise. That's when he achieved his second straight American League All-Star appearance. But now you have a 30-year-old Matt Wieters, came off of a .267 year, had 8 home runs, 25 RBIs, and played 75 games. I just don't know where the ceiling is for this guy at this point.
Has he even hit it? Is he
there? I think he did. I think he hit his ceiling, and if I do say so myself, I think he hit that ceiling during the 2012 season. I think that was the year right there where he just didn't put it together.
Well, maybe 2014 when he had that monster first month of the season.
The monster 26 games.
Yeah, and then he got hurt for the remainder of the season. I think that also may have been not even a flash in the pan, may have just been the exception and not the norm. And everyone was like all excited when he came back from injury. Like, yeah, he was the best hitter in baseball when he went down. And you're thinking to yourself, well, you know who else was also the best hitter in baseball at the beginning of the year? Was also a catcher for the Orioles?
Who's that?
Javi Lopez.
Yep, that is very true. Of course, when you look at his fielding percentage over the years as well, since we talked about his offensive numbers. Of course, in 2011, he won his first Gold Glove. 2012, also won his second Gold Glove. And, of course, there's no question about it. Matt Wieters has been the best defensive catcher for the Baltimore Orioles in God knows how long forever. But here are his numbers fielding percentage-wise. In 2009, he had .991. 2010, .994. 2011, .995. So it got better. It got better as the years went on and he had more playing time. 2012, dropped down to .991. 2013, .997. So that was his career best right there. Even though he didn't win the Gold Glove, he should have won the Gold Glove during that time.
A lot of people should win the Gold Glove who end up not winning the Gold Glove.
I know. 2014, in the slew of games he played, .994. And then in 2015, he had 5 errors and only 3 double plays, .989. So you happen to think his numbers offensively have went down, his fielding percentage has went down. Where is the appeal in 2016 for Matt Wieters? I mean, I honestly don't know at this point.
Yeah, everybody was, I mean, they're saying, wow, Matty actually took the qualifying offer. That's the most surprising thing, considering that he is a Scott Boras client, and they usually go to free agency. And that's what people are talking about mainly, just a surprise that he actually took the qualifying offer. And with that, you don't really know where they're going with Matt Wieters. But Dan Duquette did the right thing, I think. And he came out and said, well, despite the fact that Matt Wieters did take the qualifying offer, we still have resources to get Chris Davis and another top-of-the-rotation starter type of guy, the guys that we were aiming for going into the season. So Matt Wieters, he says, doesn't really change much.
I would like to believe that, but, you know.
Did I call him Dan that time?
You did call him Dan that time.
Okay, good.
Yeah, and I would like to believe Dan Duquette when he says that, but history has shown that normally when somebody accepts a qualifying offer that big, your chances of signing somebody to an offer equal to or more is going to be slim to none. I would like to think that, you know, with all the news that has went on with the Orioles, with Matt Wieters accepting the qualifying offer, with Dylan Bundy being shut down yet again in the Arizona Fall League due to arm tightness. And that's another thing, too. 23-year-old Dylan Bundy, once again, put on the shelf. Where do you draw the line here?
Well, considering that it's not really, well, I mean, it is hurting your team because you were kind of banking on this guy being a future starter.
Because he has to join the roster eventually too, right? According to his contract.
Yeah, he does have to join the roster eventually. Yeah, that, I think that's where you would have to draw a line as he comes into the majors and he ends up stinking up the joint. It's like, yeah, well, you've had ample amounts of time to practice and own your game, and you've been hurt for all this time. Granted, not his fault.
No.
For the most part, unless like there's something wrong with his conditioning or something wrong with his training. I mean, you really can't. You could do everything that you can do to try to prevent injuries as much as you can, but some people are just snake bit. I don't really know how you would draw it with this guy, because all of a sudden you draw the line with him. He goes to another team. All of a sudden he gets rejuvenated with his injuries, and all of a sudden he becomes a Cy Young candidate.
Well, there has been news on the Twitter feed that there's a tease going on between the Orioles and the Cincinnati Reds, apparently, or maybe it's just a rumor mill, because let's face it, that's all the MLB hot stove talk is just rumor mills after rumor mills after rumor mills.
About 98% of it isn't true.
Yeah, exactly. There have been talks between the Reds and the Orioles, apparently, about dealing Dylan Bundy for Todd Frazier. Don't get me wrong, I would love to have Todd Frazier on the Baltimore Orioles, but with an injured 23-year-old Dylan Bundy who hasn't even had, what, 10 games experience in the majors, I don't know how you could pull that off.
And some parts of those games, he was looked like one of the more dominant prospects in baseball. So, I mean, with that, you want to say, well, we can give him a chance, but you got to figure out, maybe you can see what you can get for this guy. And you've had it to where, like, you heard the rumors of the blockbuster trades about how everybody wanted Bundy, everybody wanted Machado, everybody wanted the other guy. I'm blanking on his name right now. But everybody wanted Dylan Bundy, and they were willing to give up some decent, you know, players for him. Maybe if one of those offers comes up on the table, maybe you take it.
Maybe you take it indeed, and hopefully those resources that you have allocated will still be put forth into re-signing Chris Davis, which is, according to most baseball experts, the top free agent in the 2015-16 MLB offseason.
And the top free agent that if the Orioles do not sign, fans will revolt. This is the Baltimore Sports Free For All.
With several seconds left on the clock, all the Ravens had to do was tackle Blake Bortles. That was it. Or, when you're looking at the replay, do nothing at all. Just stand there. The line wasn't set. Hey, even the referee said it after the game. Not that it changes the outcome of what was a 22-20 loss to a playoff-contending Jacksonville Jaguars team.
At home.
At home. Where the Ravens now are 1-3 at home. So think about it. You're 2-7 on the year. Three of those seven losses were at M&T Bank Stadium, a place where historically the Ravens have been successful.
They're one of the hardest places to play. As a matter of fact, ESPN named it the hardest place to play a couple years ago in their home field advantage articles that they wrote a while back.
Yeah, I mean, even the Kansas City Chiefs Arrowhead Stadium has been a tough place to play. I mean, even Peyton Manning will tell you first thing that it's tough to play there, even though the Chiefs haven't had great success there.
Peyton Manning will tell you that it's hard to play in Foxborough.
That's very true, too.
Especially in January.
It's tough to play in Seattle, but Baltimore has been a tough place to play for opposing teams. But unfortunately, in the 2015 season...
Not the case.
That is marred by injuries, that is marred by inefficient play calling, that is marred by
undisciplined
plays by defense... It just has not been the Ravens' year. And when you look at the first half of the game where the Ravens at the time were leading the Jaguars 14-10, the Ravens had everything going right for them. Joe Flacco was playing very good quarterback play. He had two touchdowns, he had no turnovers in the first half, and they were going to get the ball back in the third quarter and the second half kickoff. So you were thinking to yourself, okay, the offense has been on the road. Has been on a roll. Flacco's going to complete to Crockett Gilmore. He's going to complete to Max Williams. He's going to complete it to blanking on the receiver's name. We've been going through so many receivers now. Kamar Aiken.
Do you have to remember them all?
Yeah, you don't really have to remember all. I know one you don't have to remember now, Breshad Perriman.
Yeah, because he's in the IR. And one thing...
For Osgood Schlatter's disease.
There is only one thing that you can take out of this game. Just one thing, Josh. That is the tight end play. Because the tight end play was pretty good. You're okay at tight end, despite the fact that Dennis Pitta is out for... Forever, maybe?
Yep. Crockett Gilmore and Max Williams both combined for 8 receptions, 82 yards, and 2 touchdowns right there.
Yeah, I think tight end, you're set right there. Now you got to go
What about fullback? Are you good at fullback?
With Juszczyk?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, exactly. 5 catches, 47 yards right there. What about Kamar Aiken? Are you sold on him?
Not really.
7 catches, 73. Yeah, 7 catches. If you are the number one receiver on your team, if somebody throws the ball to you 14 times, you catch it 7 times... You would think that maybe you'd get, I don't know, 120, 130 yards, give or take.
Yeah, Carl Pickens would have himself a game once in a while, but everybody was pretty unanimous that he was like a wet dog.
Yeah, but Kamar Aiken, 73 yards, only averaged 10.4 yards per catch, and it just was not a good... I mean, Chris Givens, same thing, lack of production there, 4 catches, 37 yards... It just seems like the tight ends are the most productive unit on your team right now with Gilmore, Max Williams, and even Nick Boyle, who many fans thought wouldn't even have made the squad this year. But one thing you have to pinpoint at, of course, we'll get to Elvis Dumervil in a minute because he, I guess you could say he was the reason the Ravens lost the game in the first place. But Joe Flacco, 34 for 45. First of all, before I read the rest of his stats, if you throw for 45 times in a game, the chances of you winning that game are going to be very slim. 316 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, including a lost fumble, 1 sack allowed for 8 yards loss, and had a 98 quarterback rating. But take quarterback rating and stuff out of that for a second because people use that to defend Flacco.
Yeah, you want to take the quarterback rating out of the equation? How about Kirk Cousins with a perfect 158.3?
Yeah. Usually you have to play perfect in this league and play turnover-free football to win the game. I mean, that's basically the point of playing the quarterback position is even if you don't put up 300-something yards, you don't put up 3 touchdowns, if you don't turn the ball over, things are going to be okay. But it just seems like in the second half, Flacco got careless. He was thrown off of his back foot a lot, which I just don't understand because that was something he never did with Gary Kubiak as his offensive coordinator. And I don't know if this thing with Mark Trestman, what's going on with him and Flacco and the communication there, but it just seems like Flacco is not getting it. The numbers are there, but he's just not getting it.
And Josh, he's on pace to pass for 4,000 yards.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
You have your cake, eat it too.
Yeah, you have your cake and eat it too, but the turnovers are coming in at a high rate for this guy. And it just seems like I don't know if he's gambling at this point or maybe he's just being lackadaisical in the plays that he is given and is just being careless. I mean, I don't know what to make of it right here.
I can't really make of it myself. It just becomes harder and harder to talk about this team on a weekly basis when I just know for the fact that
it's even harder to talk about the Terps football team. I mean, because, of course, we know how their losses are going to go. But with the Ravens, they find new ways to shoot themselves in the foot and lose games. And I told you this before. I told you this before the segment. I said, if you shoot yourself so many times in the foot, eventually you're going to bleed to death.
Well, they've already bled to death, Josh. You just got to wait for the season just to end and then go for what you can pick up in the offseason and just try to do something, anything at all that you can think of. And hopefully make it work, but everybody complaining about the refs and saying, oh, well, do the refs get fined? Do receivers get fined every time they drop a pass? Do you get fined at work every time you show up late or something like that? Or do you get reprimanded or talked to about it, or you just don't get the rewards at work that you usually get? Okay, and everybody's talking about the referees and complaining about the referees. They try to find something to try to find some reason how it's not the Ravens' fault, why they suck. And they can't seem to find it, so they're blaming these referees about, they messed up the call, and it's been a recurring thing. Guess what, Ravens fans? You're not the only team screwed over by the referees this year, and the referees are, without a doubt, not the best up to par. It almost seems like it's like replacement ref time, but at the same time, the refs did you a favor in this game.
Yeah, and looking at John Harbaugh's comments after the fact, where the NFL came out and said, technically the Jaguars were committing a penalty, it would have been offset, and the game would have been over anyway because both teams commit a penalty. Normally, when the defense commits a penalty, the offense gets one more play if there's no time left. But if both sides commit penalties, then it's both offset, nobody gets a chance, game over, Ravens win, and we're having an entirely different conversation today. Granted, the Ravens would have been 3-6, but we would be having a different conversation.
The Ravens would have been 3-6 and not being in contention for a number one draft pick.
No.
Is why I'm saying the refs did you a favor.
Exactly.
So stop complaining. Your team sucks.
Yeah.
Get over it.
And it's just going to be a long road ahead. And I guess you could say they are approaching Maryland Terrapins territory right now because I don't see another win on their stat sheet. Maybe the Cleveland Browns, perhaps? But even they are in contention right now. I could say the St.
And they got Johnny Football.
Yeah, and the St. Louis Rams, maybe? I mean, they got Case Keenum starting at quarterback, and they're going to be visiting M&T Bank Stadium. Do you let that guy come in there and throw all over you?
Calling it right now, Case Keenum over 400 yards.
Stop it.
Four touchdowns.
Stop it. Now you're just being cynical.
I didn't put it on microphone, and I didn't put it on a blog post, so it's moot point. It didn't happen, but I did call Rousey losing on Saturday.
You did. I mean, you didn't put it on microphone, but you technically did say, don't be shocked if Holly Holm did win. All right, so now the Ravens have an upcoming game at home yet again against a St. Louis Rams team that isn't necessarily out of it. They're 4-5 right now, 1-3 on the road, but they're coming up some quarterback controversy themselves since we mentioned Johnny Manziel with the Cleveland Browns. Nick Foles, who was playing Pro Bowl-style football with the Eagles not too long ago, benched by head coach Jeff Fisher, and now you have Case Keenum, who literally just got off the sidewalk to put on a Rams uniform and is now playing quarterback for this team.
He was selling cloak-a-lashes in a side stand in New York. That's what he was doing. I mean, where the hell was this guy at the whole time? And where are they finding these people? You got Case Keenum, Blaine Gabbert, all these dumpster fires at quarterback, and just some bad, bad quarterback play. It's like you got the haves and the have-nots, and Joe Flacco stuck up there between, is he elite? Is he not elite? That kind of thing. But Case Keenum, Brandon Wheaton, Matt Cassel, Blaine Gabbert, these are the guys that you can put to lead your pro football team. Out of the millions of people who try out for football every day, I don't know, Josh. It just seems to me like the disparity in talent in the NFL has become really great. And seeing Case Keenum, but I would not be surprised, as I said, if he put up over 400 yards against the Ravens. They are bad.
All right, disparity of talent aside, Todd Gurley, who's got 709 yards with 5 touchdowns.
And that's who you need to watch out for.
Yeah, a beast of a running back out of the University of Georgia. Georgia Bulldog Todd Gurley has been playing like a bulldog the last several weeks, just mauling opposing linebackers, defensive backs.
Not all bulldogs maul people to death.
They have big jaws. I mean, have you ever been bitten by a bulldog?
They're only as violent as people raise them to be.
Have you ever seen them eat a steak? Some of them eat it like you wouldn't want to be that steak, man.
I don't know. They don't maul things like on a regular basis. You're stereotyping bulldogs, Josh.
No, I am not. I'm just
you're
saying,
bulldog sis.
I'm just saying the way they bite. That's all. Todd Gurley's got bite right now, and he's laying it on against opposing defenses.
Dog sis.
He may be putting it against the Baltimore Ravens. Okay, so for the sake of tradition here on the free for all, prediction time, score prediction time. How do you see this game turning out?
Rams 65-0.
Stop. Is that your real prediction?
No.
Okay, what's your real prediction?
My real prediction is actually a Rams 31-17.
31-17. Okay, so you not only see the Rams offense cramming it down the Ravens defense's throat, but you also see the Ravens offense not being able to muster enough yards, muster enough productive drives to beat this Rams defense.
I think that loss against the Jaguars at home may have been the breaking point. They're just where you just broke. Everybody's broken. They're just like, I know we're getting paid millions of dollars to play a game. I know everything's been going on, but guys, what are we doing?
Yeah, it's like you buy that pretty girl many bouquets of flowers, and you think that she's going to say yes and date you, and then all of a sudden you find out she's got a boyfriend. And it just totally ruins your expectations.
She parades that boyfriend out in front of you, and you're just like, why bother?
Why bother? I'm going to say 28. I'm a little more generous with you in terms of the Ravens offense. I'm going to say 28-24 Rams. Todd Gurley has all 4 Rams touchdowns.
By the way, the Rams 65-0 over the Ravens.
Uh-huh.
That's an actual score I had in Madden because I play as the Rams.
Nobody cares about your Madden team.
I know. I'm just saying that's the way it would be because we do a fantasy draft in a connected franchise.
Well, I do know this, though. Your Madden Ravens team certainly would be a little bit better, would have a little more fight than this 2015 Ravens team.
You do know they have Matt Moore quarterback, right, in my connected franchise?
I take that back.
They are bad. The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. Basketball season is finally here for the Maryland Terrapins, and we are very excited about that because that means we get to talk about football less and less.
Yeah, let's just get football out of the way real quick, of course. Maryland loses to number 13, Michigan State, at Michigan State, 24-7. I'm surprised the score wasn't as high as I thought it would.
Yeah, a lot of these Big Ten teams that are supposed to be waxing people are not really exactly waxing people, like Ohio State. That's the reason why maybe their ranking has slipped from number 1 to number 3 after their bye week, but everything's been going on with Maryland. It's still holding true with our prediction, mainly my prediction, that, 2 wins is status quo.
Yeah, not to mention the starting quarterback for the Spartans, Connor Cook, was out of the game after going 6-for-20 with an interception, and you would have thought
that was your chance.
That was your chance, and you blew it because your quarterbacks could not do any better. Well, that being said, Ray, since we are pretty much going to be talking about Maryland basketball more so going towards the end of the season, let's touch base on the number 3 Maryland Terrapins men's basketball team, who this past weekend at Xfinity Center on Gary Williams Court, I guess if that's the right way to say it right there, they won 80-56 over Mount St. Mary's. And it was, I guess you could say, it could have been a better showing by the number 3 team in the country, but at the same time, hey, 24-point win at home, you'll take that any time, right?
I would take I would take that kind of win anytime, anywhere, especially if it was for the football team.
Yep.
But they're not going to be getting that anytime soon. So the Terps, Maryland men's basketball team, impressive first start. There were a few turnovers at the beginning in the first half that kind of made me go, huh. Well, this is a young team. Let's see if they can get the growing pains out of the way early.
By the way, here are some stats from that Mount St. Mary's win that are quite interesting. Four of the five starters for the Terps all scored in double figures. Jared Nickens had 11 points on the bench as well. Your lead scorer was Jake Lehman with 16 points. Melo Trimble second with 14. Robert Carter got 10 points. Diamond Stone had 10 points. Diamond Stone, by the way, 7 rebounds, 5 of them on defense. And what is it by the way, 2 on offense as well. And what did we always say about offensive rebounds in the college basketball season, Ray? How beneficial are they in terms of being a nationally ranked team?
They've got the benefits to being the nationally ranked team. They're the kings of the court right now in terms of where Maryland is at.
Yeah, and one thing's for sure, Maryland does have a game this week against Georgetown, against the Hoyas, so hopefully that results in a W, and surely we'll be talking about that box score on the next episode of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. Also, the women, Ray, had a much more dominant performance, the number 9 Maryland Lady Terps defeating UMass Lowell 102-53, almost a 50-point victory for Brenda Freeze's ladies on the court.
Yeah, it was an impressive showing by them, and in terms of where Maryland is at with the Maryland's women's basketball team, it's pretty much par for the course right now.
22 points by Shatori Walker-Kimbrough. Let's see. Kia Gillespie, 15 points. Brene Mosley, 24 points. And Brianna Jones had 9 rebounds, 4 on offense, 2 blocks, 10 points. So dominant performance by the ladies. Now, as far as, you know, college basketball goes for both the men and the women, you know, the women, of course, are going to have a tough road ahead. Like we've always said, right now you have 2 teams that rule women's basketball in college. You have Baylor and, of course, your defending national champions, the UConn Huskies.
Of course it's the UConn Huskies.
Of course. In terms of the men's basketball team, it seems like an open field. I mean, you look at this past week, this past Friday, Wisconsin, who not only won the Big Ten overall, but they lost in the national title finals to Duke. They lost their home opener to an unranked team. And who knows how far their ranking is going to drop because of that loss.
Parity.
Yeah, parity. And, I mean, even if the Terps did lose to Georgetown this week, it's still, I don't think it would affect their top 5 ranking at this point. But believe me, there is a long season ahead. A lot of these teams play unranked.
Going to lose, Josh.
Yeah, Duke's playing Kentucky this week.
And unless you're the UConn Huskies, you don't go undefeated in men's basketball season.
Yeah, I mean, Duke and Kentucky are both playing this week. Both are in the top 5. Do you think any of them are going to panic if they lose to each other?
No. Nope.
No, not at all.
Long season.
So, yes, salvage the wins, don't take the losses too personally, and let your college basketball season commence, because by all standards and practices here, the Terrapins on both the men's side and the women's side are both going to be nationally ranked teams when it's all said and done. Anything we can close the show out with? Any closing statements, remarks?
Ronda Rousey will be back.
Ronda Rousey will be back. All right, as far as for me, great job, Larry Hogan. 100% cancer-free, according to doctors. Of course, he will have to make visits regularly. But, hey, that's always great to hear somebody beating cancer.
Yes, it's a great story. His fight's not over, but great story. Great story nonetheless. But until that time comes where we have another show, this has been another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. I am Ray Atkinson.
And I am Josh Hall.
And we will see you all. The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.